I ball up the dish towel, but after a glance at Abuela, smooth it out. I don't want her to see I'm upset. I didn't bring anyone around your daughter, I say, and shoot another look at Abuela. She raises an eyebrow and walks into the living room. And if I have a friend from school come over to help me with the side project, that's my business. Tyrone's voice is harsh in reply. Working on a side project is a funny way to say you're someone's side piece. My breath gets short in my chest. I can't believe Tyrone sometimes. Tyrone, he wasn't around your daughter. She was asleep. She never met him, and I don't have to explain myself to you. Your grandmother was there? Tyrone asks. I force myself to inhale deeply, then exhale the same way before I respond. I try to remember that what's best for baby girl isn't always what's easiest for me, because right now, what would be easy is to hang up on Tyrone. Yes, Abuela was home. Put her on. I want to ask her myself. I walk into the living room and stop halfway to the couch. Nah, I don't ask about the girls he dates, and I don't harass him when he says he doesn't introduce them to baby girl. Plus, we aren't children anymore. Our parents aren't going to sign us out of trouble. Tyrone, I'm not putting my grandmother on. I have never lied to you. He breathes hard in my ear, then all sound drops from the call. He's hung up on me. Baby girl is sitting in Abuela's lap, sucking her thumb. Why don't you get her dressed? Abuela asks. At this rate, I have missed a procession by the time I get to the church, and I don't like walking in late. We can go get breakfast instead. We'll do those dishes later. I know the smile I forced onto my face wobbles at the edges, but I keep it pinned on, and I keep my tears to myself. Cafe Sorrel. When Abuela, baby girl, and I have an excursion, the getting ready part is always a production. Tossing that my hands are still shaking from my conversation with Tyrone, and I'm moving in slow motion just to iron one blouse. By the time we have baby girl strapped into the stroller and exit the house, it's already noon. We don't go out to eat much. When I was younger, we used to visit the local restaurants for holidays and birthdays or after going to the cemetery to visit with my grandfather or mom's. But that was a long while ago, before Abuela stopped working. Now the only time we have outside food is if I bring something in from the Burger John or when Tyrone and I used to go on dates. Otherwise, it's on me or Abuela to cook. Today I'm surprised when Abuela heads to the train. We go to a spot in Rittenhouse Square called Cafe Sorrel. The napkins are made of cloth, and the flowers in the vases are real and fresh. The hostess asks if we need a booster seat, and I realize that baby girl has never been in a high-class restaurant. When the server arrives, I notice everything he does, including the way he straightens the knife and salad fork and how he folds our napkins into a triangle and gently holds them out for us to place on our laps and how elegantly he pours water into our glasses. This is really fancy, Abuela, I say when the server walks away. I trace the delicate embroidery on the edge of the tablecloth. Yes, I like this place. Abuela takes a sip of her water. And well, that doesn't make any sense. This place looks new, and when would Abuela have ever had the occasion to come eat here? I open my mouth to ask, but the server has circled back with our menus. We have a fall special with the following dishes. He reads off his notepad, and I close my eyes when he describes how each dish is prepared. I want to memorize everything. You order, Nena. This is all you. Abuela turns to the server. My granddaughter is taking a culinary arts class. She is amazing in the kitchen. Oh, the server raises an eyebrow. How lovely. You're going to have to let us know what you think of the meal. I have a feeling he's probably a college student at Penn or Temple and couldn't care less what I think. He's simply being overly friendly to get that tip. So no, I don't plan on giving him my opinion on anything. I take a look at the menu and keep my smile on my face, even though the prices drop-kick me in the gut. I look for the cheapest items on the menu, then smile up at the server. May I have the duck appetizer on the bed of risotto? My grandmother will have the partridge, and can we have some pommes frites for this little one? I gesture to baby girl, who gives a huge smile and bangs on the table. The server removes our menus and stacks them in his arms. Very well, your bread is on its way. Buela neatly folds and refolds the napkin in her lap. Those sounded like very nice orders. How is class going? I haven't heard you mention any special quizzes lately, Buela asks and sips her water. She knows. I can see it in her face that she knows. Who told you?
Told me what, Nena?
Buela says. She smiles at the busboy who sets a basket of bread on the table. He has a tattoo of the Puerto Rican flag on his neck, and although Buela hates tattoos, she loves her island. I bet she'll pass him a tip later.
Oh, Lord, mijo, bringing us all this bread. I haven't been walking as much as I used to. This bread is going to go straight to my hips, she says as she grabs a roll and breaks it in half. She gives the other half to baby girl, who bites into it with enthusiasm. The busboy smiles at her.
And what would be the point of hips if we couldn't enjoy bread every now and then? The busboy says in Spanish. And although this whole exchange is cute, I need him to walk away. As soon as he does, I pounce again.
I know you know I've been skipping class. It's written all over your face. Who said something?
Buela takes a huge bite of bread and makes me wait until she's done chewing to speak. What is most important is that you didn't tell me. Angelica must have found out somehow, or maybe Miss Fuentes saw last week's attendance sheet and called home.
You've never had an issue with attendance, not even when you were pregnant. It seems to me like you were really excited about the class for a while, and maybe when it got hard, you got scared about the challenge.
I look away from Buela and use my napkin to wipe crumbs from baby girl's chin. Buela reaches across and steals my hand.
I'm not saying I don't understand, or that I don't know you well enough to say that you've climbed higher hills. I only mean to say, I hope you didn't sell yourself short.
I squeeze her hand.
I haven't dropped the class entirely yet.
So are you going to go back?
I shrug and look down at my plate, where I've crumbled a bread roll into nothing but dust.
Buela takes the hint.
Tell me about your other classes.
She listens as I tell her about physics and English, about the college essay I'm working on. When the food comes out, the scents fill my nostrils, and I close my eyes and inhale deeply.
What's this with my bird?
Buela points.
Polenta, I say, and take a bite of my risotto. I close my eyes again and savor. Basil, cream, and a pop of something. I take another bite but still can't place it.
Buela says something and I chew slowly, trying to hear her past the rush in my ears.
What do you say? I ask when I come back to Earth. I was saying this is really good. How is yours?
Too good. I can't wait to try it at home. Baby girl murmurs agreement through a mouthful of fries.
So, how was it, miss? The server asks as he takes away the plates.
Really good. And although I said I wasn't going to say anything, I can't keep the question to myself.
There was something in the risotto, not the basil or cream or mushroom, but something else.
The server shakes his head with a puzzled look, crinkling his forehead.
I'm not sure. No other ingredients are listed on the menu.
I hope my annoyance doesn't show on my face.
Oh, okay.
Buela smiles.
May I have a coffee and the check?
Very well, the server says.
Yum, yum, yum.
Baby girl hums under her breath and I offer her water. She takes a sip and lets it dribble down her chin and grins.
Emma!
I look up when I feel someone behind my shoulder, hoping it's the server so I can ask for another napkin, but my eyes land on a buttoned-up white jacket, a woman's smiling face beneath a chef's hat.
Everything good here, ladies?
Buela and I nod.
Very good. I enjoyed the polenta, Buela says and holds up her forefinger touching her thumb.
I try not to groan at how excited she sounds.
I heard there was a question about the risotto,
The chef looks at me. My mouth goes dry. Even though I don't know this lady, I'm starstruck by the jacket, by the Crocs and checkered pants, by the food that melted in my mouth and looked almost too pretty to eat. Chefs rarely leave their kitchens, so I know it's a big deal she decided to answer me in person. Get it together, Imani. I tasted the basil and cream, what might have been cremini mushrooms, but there was something else. At the back of my tongue, I couldn't place it. I say and blush. I sound as silly as Buela. Ah, probably the orange zest. It's just a hint. Most people can't even taste it, but it adds a bright note. She cocks her head to the side. Oh, orange zest. I close my eyes and run my tongue along my teeth. Try to remember the flavor. Yeah, that feels right. Orange zest. My eyes pop open. The server comes back and hands the check to Buela, who immediately swoops it under the table so I can't see it. Chef, did the young lady tell you? She's taking a culinary arts class, the server says, and takes the check back from Buela with her payment. Are you? At the institute? I shake my head. At my high school. It just started this year with a new instructor. Her eyes sharpen on my face, and I almost lean back from the intensity of her look. Wait a minute. A friend of mine just started teaching a cooking class at a high school. You don't go to a charter school near here by any chance. Before I can answer, Buela chimes in. She does. Imani goes to Schomburg Charter School about 15 minutes from here on the bus. Is your friend Chef Aiden? The chef claps her hands together and laughs. What a small world. One of Aiden's students coming into my restaurant. You have a good instructor. Aiden is one of a kind. Kind of a hard ass, but he'll teach you a lot. Her eyes twinkle when she says it, and I can tell she and Chef Aiden must know each other well. And just in case they are friends, I keep my mouth shut about his hard assness. She smiles at me again. You have the taste buds, and married with the technique and work ethic you're learning in class, you'll acquire the holy trinity to make it in this industry. I need to get back to my kitchen, but don't worry about today's bill. She waves at the server to bring the bill back. It's on me. Let Aiden know it was a pleasure to meet one of his students. I hear her chuckling under her breath as she walks away. From e.santiago@schs.edu to sarahfolks_15@exchange.com. Date, Sunday, October 6, 10:31 p.m. Subject, recipe. Hey Aunt Sarah, I'm glad to hear that by the time the storm touched down near you, it was mostly rain and nothing too bad. I kept my eye on the news all week and kept hoping the family would be okay. My father says the worst of the storm missed them, but I know there were power outages on the western side of the island. It was nice of you to ask how you could help. My father says they are accepting donations of boxes of canned food and bottled water. I'm attaching the information link at the end of the email. Thank you for your last recipe for fried green tomatoes. The story of how you and my mama used to eat the green tomatoes straight from the vine made me smile. I can't believe it was so easy for you to just walk into your backyard and pick them, especially since I struggled to find them in my neighborhood. The vendors at the vegetable stands kept looking at me like I was stupid. But I finally found some at a farmer's market on the other side of the city. But let me tell you, the journey was worth it. Them things were delicious. I fried them like you said, but I used a little bit of panko breadcrumbs in the dredge. Then I paired them with queso frito and some basil, and it was like a home-style take on caprese salad. I'm going to try the recipe again this week, and I'll send you my remix once I have it exactly right. Thanks again for the invite to come down during Christmas break. I don't think I can travel down on the bus with baby girl by myself, and I wouldn't want to leave her, but I hope to make it down sometime. With love and cinnamon dust, E. Taste buds. Although my Sunday was transformed from a cluster mess into a nice memory, Monday rolls around and I've overslept, baby girl is late for daycare, and Buela keeps chewing my head off about the smallest things, and by the time I make it to the bus stop, I've missed Angelica
and advisory. And what doesn't help my bad mood is that I still haven't made a decision about culinary arts. I have one period after lunch to decide whether I'm going to go or not. And I know that if I tack on too many more absences, I'm going to have to drop the class simply because I'll be failing it. I don't know what I'm going to do, but luckily, lunch rolls around and I have Angelica to take my mind off any decisions. By the time I meet up with her at our table, she's visibly trembling with excitement. You don't understand, Imani. It was so perfect. I nod and smile. Tell me everything. Why was it so perfect? So it was perfect, not just because of the movie Laura streamed, which was funny and romantic, or the deep conversations we had, or the wine Laura brought from her father's house. I was so nervous, I was giggling, and Laura just reached out and... Well, that part was perfect too. All of it. Something inside me stops laughing at her dreamy expression. My girl is truly in love, and I'm choked up at having been a part of making that night special for her. Imani, the food? I've had your cooking a dozen times, but there was one point where Laura and I both put our forks down and just grinned like little kids because we were so happy. And I think the meal has something to do with it because I had some of the leftovers last night and I just felt all warm and fuzzy and loved inside. If I ever have that chimichimi sauce again, I'll think of that night. I laugh. It's chimichurri sauce, Angelica, and I'm glad you liked it. I told you I put a little extra heat in it, and it sounds like you added more than enough spice to the rest of the night. And then I'm struck stupid, because in all the time I've known her, I've never seen Angelica blush. But she does. Her brown skin warms up with a tinge of pink in the cheeks as she snorts on her sandwich. New beginnings. When the bell rings for my last class before culinary arts, I'm out the door with the quickness. I want to get there before any of the other students. By the time I arrive at class, I'm out of breath and huffing, but I still make sure not to slam the door behind me. Chef Aiden looks up with a start when he hears my heavy breathing. I can't read the look on his face. Inscrutable, Miss Fuentes would call it. Imani, long time. Chef Aiden closes his laptop with a soft click. He stuffs his hands into his soft, checkered chef's pants. We missed you last week. I'm not a quitter. I didn't understand why you were asking me to throw away food or follow the recipe exactly, even though my instincts told me it would taste better differently. I didn't get it. But I think I do now. And I wanted to say... What did I want to say? Chef waits. The moment stretches into the yard beyond awkward and enters the goalpost of embarrassing. He raises his right eyebrow. I clear my throat, and I know my face is burning. I wanted to say, I promise to work hard, to try my best to follow directions, because I think about creating food all the time, and even though I know a lot, I can learn more. I went to a restaurant over the weekend. The head chef said she knows you. It was Cafe Soro. Seeing her in her coat and tasting her food, it not only made me realize I want to keep getting my technique down in this class, it made me realize I can be like her one day, an executive chef. Chef doesn't say anything. He just keeps blinking at me with his head cocked. My chest deflates. I don't think he can kick me out of class. Not with only four absences, but I also don't want him to hate me. I swallow back a knot that collects in my throat. Look down at the long metal table where we present our dishes. I missed being in class, and I didn't know how much until this moment. Lisa is an excellent chef. I'm glad you were able to try her food. As for your absences, we've been looking for someone in class to lead the fundraising campaign for the trip to Spain. One day you might own a restaurant or be head chef, and honing your leadership skills now will be useful. Would you like to head that committee? I hear everything he's saying, but it's like each piece of information is a bit of colored glass, and I need hold it up to the light to see how it shines. Chef Aiden isn't angry with me. Chef Aiden thinks I could own or be head chef of a restaurant one day. Chef Aiden wants me to lead a fundraising committee. I've seen chefs on TV time and time again say that they had to pay their dues. And I never knew exactly what that meant, but now I think I get it. It's about doing the grunt work behind the scenes, washing dishes, folding napkins, taking stock before you ever touch a recipe. It's about being the creative mind behind raising a shit ton of money so you can go on a trip abroad. I hold my hand out. Chef looks at it and shakes it, super serious. He pats me on the shoulder. You've got what it takes, Imani. I don't doubt that if you keep yourself focused and your knives sharp, you'll be running a kitchen one day. I won't treat you any different from anyone else just because you have something special. But let's both take a moment to acknowledge that you've got what it takes. I put on my jacket, my scarf, and my game face. I've got what it takes. Guess who's back? When the rest of the class walks into the room, most of the students don't seem surprised to see me. They must have just thought I was absent. Malachi raises an eyebrow, and his lips perk up on one end. We haven't talked since Saturday. We texted a little on Sunday, but after the phone call with Tyrone, talking with Malachi lost some of its glow. I look away from him so where pretty Leslie cuts her eyes at me, then inspects her nails. Passion fruit purple, I'd name them. I go to my old station, but Chef flags me down. Over here, Imani. You will work with Richard and Amanda as a trio. I think you'll work better as part of a team. He claps his hands together. Okay, everyone. Your recipes are on your boards. I walk over to Richard and Amanda and offer a weak smile. Richard smiles back, and Amanda tightens her cap. I run a hand down my jacket front. It feels good to be back in uniform. The next hour passes by in a blur. I spend the majority of the time listening to Amanda and Richard as they ask me to dice, chop, and saute root vegetables. I pay more attention to the little details than the overall dish. By the time everything is plated, I'm surprised at what it actually is. The chicken breast is perfectly cooked, and the thinly sliced carrots look beautiful underneath it. And although I didn't have anything to do with the seasoning or the plating, I'm proud of how the whole dish came together. Even if I would have used a bit of balsamic vinegar in the sauce. We place the plate in front of Chef, and he scoops a clean fork from his bowl and tries it. Very good. Very, very good. Well done, team. I roll my eyes at him, and he winks at me as he shoos us away so the next group can be graded. As class lets out, I glance at Malachi's station, but he's already gone. I'm halfway down the hall when an arm comes around my shoulder, and with a loud smack, a kiss is placed on my left temple. Glad to have you back, Santi, Malachi says with the grin that I return. Glad to be back. Visitation. The rest of the school week goes by quickly, and before I know it, it's Saturday morning. Baby girl, hold still, I say, tugging her little Jordans onto her feet. She keeps wriggling around, trying to climb up to Tyrone. Can you help, please? I've been trying to get her dressed for more than 5 minutes, and he's just been sitting across from me like a dodo bird. Fine, he's still mad about the Malachi thing, but Lord knows he has all kinds of girls up in his house, so why he's hung up on my friends is beyond me. He didn't even say hello to Abuela, and she has nothing to do with this. As much as his mother loves sticking her nose in the air, some days Tyrone has no damn home training. Finally, he lets go a long sigh. Emma, let your mom put your stuff on. But Emma tugs her foot, flipping the sneaker up, and it bangs me in the nose. Ouch! Emma! Baby girl looks up, startled at her government name springing from my lips, and starts to cry. Here, let me help, Abuela says, and picks up baby girl in the sneaker. I'm going to take her onto my bed. It might be easier to get her dressed there. She raises an eyebrow and gives me a pointed look. I know what she's thinking. She doesn't like it when Tyrone and I are mad at each other.
She says it's bad for baby girl because she gets stuck in the middle. I stop rubbing my nose and take a deep breath. You still feel some type of way? Let's just go ahead and talk about it. Tyrone readjusts the brim of his fitted. I don't have anything to say. Which is clearly a lie. Tyrone knows so many words to sweet talk a girl, but when it comes to talking about his feelings, he always swears he has nothing to say. You turned 18 a couple of months ago, which means you're an adult. We can talk like grown-ups. So, why are you angry? You date girls all the time, and this wasn't even a date. He's just a friend. He shakes his head. Man, a friend who I don't know, who was around my daughter. Is that why you're actually angry? You tell me about every girl who meets you at the playground when you have baby girl with you? Or the shopping mall trips you go on that aren't dates? But somehow, photos get posted on social media of you and girls and my daughter asleep in the stroller? Thing one, he's new to Philadelphia, so you'd have no reason to know him. Thing two, Tyrone, we have a child. We can't play silent treatment games. For the rest of our lives, God willing, we'll have a child. So I can't afford to act like one, and neither can you. And it must be true when they say you become your parents, because that lecture could have been stolen straight from Buela's script. Tyrone tugs his fitted so it covers his eyes, and I know it's not because the light slanting in through the window bothers him. He looks like a puppy that got in trouble for peeing on the rug. We decided we weren't going to stay together for the baby. Fine, I get that, but you said you weren't going to date other people. If he were Angelica, I would hold his hand and use my soft voice that I take on when I hurt her feelings. If he were Buela, I would take a deep breath and use my I'm an adult voice that is slow and patient. But he's neither of those people, and I still haven't figured out what voice to use when he's hurt, but also being illogical. So instead, I choose my words with slow care. I'm not dating other people, but that doesn't mean I can't, does it? I think if you have people in my neighborhood making sure your daughter is safe, that's good. That makes you a good father. But if you have people spying on me to see whether or not I bring dudes home, that's going to hurt you more than it's going to hurt me, and it's going to hurt Emma most. I feel my voice hitch in my throat. Tyrone and I have had many talks, but never one like this. Tyrone doesn't speak again. He stands when Buela comes into the room. Thanks, Mrs. Santiago. I appreciate you getting Emma ready, he says, taking baby girl from Buela's arms. He grabs the baby bag and the stroller while still holding baby girl on his hip. I open the door for him and kiss baby girl on the cheek and can't help but get a whiff of Tyrone. He smells like soap and fresh aftershave. Don't let your mom feed her too many granola bars, please. I know they seem healthy, but they are full of sugar. I won't. He leans in and has baby girl plant a kiss on my cheek. It's the closest he'll get to offering an apology. Baby girl seems happy in his arms and doesn't stir when she realizes Buela and I are staying behind. I'll have her back right on time tomorrow, Tyrone calls over his shoulder. I close the door and lean against it. Buela begins picking up the playthings that baby girl had spread across the floor. It's a hard path you're walking, Imani, but you're doing just fine. Now come help me clean your daughter's clutter. I shake my head at all the separate feelings inside me. Sometimes I feel more scattered than baby girl's toys. Proposals. Over the next week and a half, as part of my new role as head of the fundraising committee, I have to submit a list of ideas to Chef Aiden that will help us raise the $8,000 needed for our trip. I talk it over with Angelica, and her creative mind spins with big galas and silent auctions of her artwork. She even suggests reaching out to local rappers and asking them to give proceeds of their record sales for the trip. When I ask Malachi for his thoughts, he goes in a different direction than Angelica. Like the doctor he's told me he wants to be, he talks about the optimal results and makes a bullet point list of how to make the most money in the quickest fashion. Buela taps on her chin when I ask her and thinks of a bingo game at the rec center with all proceeds going to the trip. I've been calling Julio more often since the storm, and he's quick to offer his thoughts on organizing a fundraiser. He gives me a letter template to petition our district council member and has a whole game plan outlined for me to knock on doors in the neighborhood with food samples so people will donate directly. He says the best way to move forward is to keep it grassroots. When you support the community will support you. I make detailed notes of everyone's suggestions, and on my own, I spend time in the computer lab after school looking up different ways to raise money. I feel a thrill in my body. I'm excited to put my proposal in motion. I know we can make this work. But first, I'll have to convince Chef Aiden. Angelica helps me write up my presentation with graphics and pie charts, and Malachi checks my numbers to make sure all the math is correct. Buela and Baby Girl listen as I practice presenting my proposal. Although I'm the chairperson, this is my unofficial committee, and like Chef Aiden always says, sometimes you need a team to help you. I'm standing in front of Chef Aiden. I've printed out neat copies of my ideas, the timeline, and the projected amount we'll raise. As you can see from my list, there are a couple of options. I know the class has thought of a bake sale, and I think we should do that to raise money, but not for the class trip. I think we should use it to raise money to buy larger quantities of food to cook in class for us to sell. This very kitchen has a small cafe next door. Instead of using it for restaurant practice, I think we should open it up and serve lunch. We have all this food that we make but that goes to waste. Why not make larger portions and sell them for more money than we spent on the food? It would only require buying larger amounts, storing the food appropriately throughout the week, and making sure the recipes are ones we can sell. I'm sure the staff would like to have options for something other than the cafeteria food. Chef raises an eyebrow. What I'm asking will mean more work for him, mainly picking up and storing bigger quantities of food weekly. I also think we should submit a proposal to the school to have us cater the winter dinner. I stop speaking and look down at my notes. Chef Aiden pauses before asking me, "The cafeteria staff usually does the winter dinner, don't they?" We all need to learn how to serve, and that would be a great opportunity. We can propose it as one of the objectives, on-the-job experience. Chef cocks his head. "You've thought about this a lot, Imani. I'm impressed. Except the only class advanced enough to make acceptable food to feed to staff would be yours, and you all meet in the afternoon. If we want the lunch idea to work, people will have to come in early to cook. Do you think you can lead that?" I hadn't counted on more work, but I puff up my chest. I got this. The bright side. "Buela," I call from the kitchen doorway as I dry off the freshly washed dishes. I hear her chanclas shuffling down from her room. "Mija, what's going on? Baby Emma is asleep." I try not to let the disappointment show on my face. "Oh, I didn't know you'd put her down. I didn't get to say goodnight." I glance at the microwave clock. When did it get past 10? Buela rests against the doorframe. She dozed off. You know she has all that energy running around, and then she eats and boom, fast asleep. "Pass me a rag so I can help with those." "Only a few left. I got them. I actually wanted to talk to you about something else. The trip to Spain? Even though I'm not sure if I'll be able to raise enough to cover my portion, if I can pay for it, I'm still not sure what I'll do with baby girl that week. I didn't want to assume you would take on her care all by yourself." Buela takes the rag from me and folds it up in a neat little square. "You want to ask for help from Tyrone and his family?" I shake my head. "Tyrone has school, and his parents work complicated hospital hours. They wouldn't be able to pick her up and drop her off at daycare." Buela sighs. "This is a big deal. I always wanted to travel, you know? I've only ever seen my island and Philadelphia. I said after retirement that your grandfather and me would see the world. And then he died, and well..." She opens her hands as if in prayer. "And here we are. You may never get this opportunity again. I can call Tyrone's parents, and between us, we can work out a schedule. Let's think of it as a graduation present. Imani, Nena, speaking of graduation, you know I'm so proud of you, right? But you're going to have to figure out what happens next.
Have you gotten those school applications in? And that FAFSA form thing? I reach out and give Buela a tight hug, inhaling her familiar scent. She's right. About all of it. I have a lot of decisions to make, but tonight I'm going to dream about cooking and Spain and graduation. Team player.
Imani, can you blanch the asparagus and season it? Richard calls from where he's chopping onions.
Amanda is absent today, and I've been standing back less and helping out more. It's hard to keep my hands from just doing, but Richard makes sure we stay on track, following the recipe down to the last half teaspoon. I set the pot of water to boil and slice through the asparagus the way the recipe says. Over his shoulder, Richard calls out the next instruction. Oh, and the orzo, that needs to get going. Again, I nod and get the necessary ingredients from the pantry. Richard is a heavyset kid who wears an oversized jacket and has the cutest little mole over his lip. I think his family is Polish, but Richard is straight Philly, from his haircut to his sneakers. We work down to the wire, with him calling instructions and me trying to ensure I don't do anything I'm not supposed to. Today is a testing day, which means that anything we place in front of Chef will be graded. Plus, we need to be able to answer questions about each of our dishes. Richard and Amanda always do well, and I don't want to mess up their track record. I measure the necessary salt and grind the fresh peppercorn and squeeze only so much lemon. The garnish is the exact amount of time called for. Across the room, Malachi has finished plating and is cleaning up his station, rapping underneath his breath. Leslie swings her hips and mimes being in front of a microphone. I look away from them, and Richard and I approach Chef. He turns the dish in several circles before sticking his fork in, closing his eyes. Asparagus is good. Orzo is right. Skirt steak is right. He opens his eyes. The dish needs a little more salt, but otherwise, well done. I knew you could pull it off. And although he is talking to Richard and me, I have a feeling the comment was for me. Chef looks at me. What's the correct ratio of water to orzo? I answer him. He asks Richard a question about the temperature to cook a steak medium rare. Another group stands behind us, waiting to approach Chef, and I try to bite back the words bubbling in my mouth, but like a covered pot of boiling water, they spill over. You need to change your measurement. Chef looks up from his grating. Excuse me? I point to the recipe. Your measurement of salt in the recipe? We followed it exactly. So if the dish needs more salt, you need to change your measurement. He raises an eyebrow, and as we walk to our station, Richard elbows me in the ribs. Seriously, Imani? You couldn't just let it go? I don't answer. Call me salty.
Coven. Angelica, where did you get all of this stuff?
I ask her as she bursts through the door carrying bags and bags of fabric. She's changed her hair to a black bob, but the ends are bright pink. Angelica really is like one of those tropical storms we keep getting warnings about on the news, swirling until she descends in a pile of mayhem.
You know that Laura works for the theater at her school? She gets access to all the extra fabric from the set. She hooked us up, and not a moment too soon, since Halloween is only a week away.
Angelica sets the bags down and walks to where baby girl sits on the couch in front of the TV, where she's been spooning mashed potatoes into her mouth. I finger a piece of gold spandex peeking out from one of the bags.
Oh my God, baby girl isn't even 3 yet. She's not big enough for a costume to need this much material. What are we going to do with all of it?
Make her the best damn, I mean darn, costume anyone has ever seen.
Angelica, I told you, I don't even think I can take her trick-or-treating.
I shuffle from one foot to the other, and she needs to go to bed soon.
Me and your grandmother will figure out trick-or-treating. She's not my godbaby for nothing. Right, Em?
Angelica leans down and blows kisses onto baby girl's feet.
Hola, Angelica, Buela says. She's wearing pink PJs and her hair is up in rollers. It'd be late for any other friend to come over, but this is Angelica. Bendición, Abuela Gloria, Angelica sings out. She hugs Buela so tight that they're swaying. Que Dios te bendiga, mija. Buela dances with Angelica for a moment
before gesturing to the bags with her chin. What's all this?
We're going to make a costume for baby girl. Aren't we, baby girl?
Ah, bueno. It's getting late and she needs to be going to bed, no? Why don't I help? I can take measurements quicker than you two put together.
Angelica pulls out the measuring tape and her design notebook. She starts flipping through the book with her fuchsia-tipped hair swinging.
I was thinking we could do a doctor, or maybe even an astronaut. A Chiquita banana girl with a fruit crown. It all depends on what you want.
What should it be?
Buela chimes in. A beauty queen. Or how about a movie star, como la Audrey Hepburn?
I look at baby girl, patiently spooning food into her mouth like she hasn't a care in the world, and suddenly I know exactly what she should be for Halloween.
I think it'd be cute if she was a chef, with a little smock and a hat, checkered pants and a spatula, maybe even some of those little clogs. She could be cooking up a bowl of popcorn.
Angelica snaps her fingers. Yes, that's so cute. Maybe you can put on your chef jacket and take a picture before you go to work.
A chef, Buela says, a smile lighting up her face. That's perfect. And maybe Cheerios instead of popcorn.
All of a sudden, the three of us are pulling fabric out, and Buela has grabbed the measuring tape. Angelica clicks on a playlist on her phone. We all smile at baby girl, who shows off her teeth as if she knows she has a coven of women holding her down and that she can be anything and everything we dream for her.
Dreams. I sometimes wonder what my mother might have dreamed for me if she hadn't died when I was born. If she would have wanted me to be a doctor or a lawyer, if she would have been pushier to ensure I did better in school. I love Buela, and I'm so lucky to have her. But as supportive as she is, Buela isn't the type to run down to a school and smack a counselor upside the head for discouraging me from applying somewhere. Buela isn't the type to demand the school test me to see why I get mixed up with directions or struggle to speak early on. Buela walks through the world with her hands palms up. She takes what's given to her in stride, and she never complains or cries. I dream every single day for baby girl. I see people in business suits on the bus, and I imagine baby girl growing up with a briefcase and a nice executive office job. I watch a TV show and imagine baby girl as a famous actress winning an Oscar. There's so much I want for her that sometimes I think the seams of my skin aren't enough to contain every hope I have. And I whisper it to her all the time. When I'm feeding her, when she's asleep in my arms, when we are playing at the park, I whisper all the everything I know she can be and the ways I'll fight for her to be them. I want her to know her entire life, her mommy may not have had a powerful job or made millions, but that her moms did everything so that she could be an accumulation of the best dreams. From e.santiago at schs.edu to sarahfolks_15@exchange.com. Date, Friday, November 1st, 8:18 p.m. Subject, pics. Hey, Aunt Sarah. I hope you're good. I've kept playing around with that recipe you sent me for your mac and cheese. I've attached a picture of it plated. I added some Gruyere cheese, and it was finger-licking good. I also attached a picture of baby girl for Halloween. Isn't her apron the cutest? I wasn't able to go trick-or-treating with her, but Buela and Angelica took her all around the neighborhood and to the rec center, where there was a contest for best costume in different age groups. Unfortunately, she lost to an infant T'Challa, but next year, we are going to plan in advance and we will win the contest, Wakanda or no Wakanda. I appreciate you sending some ideas for the fundraiser. I actually need one more thing from you. Do you think you can send me the family's version for stuffing? I have an idea I think I could use to raise money. With all my love and some cinnamon dust, E. Every day I'm hustling. It's been 2 weeks since I turned the proposal in, but finally, Chef Aiden and the school administration have approved my fundraising plan, and I officially have a new schedule that's taken over my life.
I wake up an hour and a half earlier than I used to, before the sun has even blinked awake, and get ready for school. The guards know two of us have special permission 3 mornings out of the week to be let into the kitchen early, where Chef waits to start the lunch special for the day. Although he never said anything, I know he had to argue with the principal on our behalf to reopen the small training restaurant attached to the downstairs kitchen. Us students rotate, so no one has to show up more than once a week. But if someone can't make it, I fill in, since I'm the fundraising lead. In the afternoons, a different student volunteers to be the lunchtime server for the 3 different lunch periods. Each day after school for a whole week, one student washes the dishes and helps Chef Aiden clean the restaurant. Since people are getting extra cooking time in the morning, it should work out that everyone ultimately learns the same number of recipes. I expected teachers would want the option of another food spot in the building, but I never expected the little restaurant to be full every single shift. Most days, we run out of everything we've made, and Chef has to turn people away. And at a profit of $7 a pop for a meal, and about 10 to 12 teachers per lunch period, 3 lunch periods a day, we're raising just shy of $700 a week and have 5 weeks still left to go until our December deadline. I've done the math over and over, but it still comes out that we'll hit about $3,500 by the winter dinner. I try not to let my nervousness over how much we need to raise show when I give weekly updates to the class, but I know I have to do everything in my power to get as many people at the dinner as the gym will hold. And putting all this effort at school isn't easy. I'm still working hours at the Burger John, going to tutoring after school for math, and spending as much time with baby girl as I can manage. Before I know it, the first 2 months of school have flown by, and we are in the middle of November, which means that the winter dinner is coming up. And how much money we raise by December doesn't just determine whether the class can go to Spain. It determines whether my ideas and sweat and time have mattered, which means I can't fail. Out of the frying pan. I'm in the kitchen one early morning, sticking some bread rolls in the oven. After I set the timer, I clean my station and look around the room. Pretty Leslie is stirring a massive pot of chicken noodle soup, and Richard is slicing up tomatoes, onions, and lettuce for sandwich fixings. Chef sits at a small desk in the corner, and I know this is my chance. Chef, I was wondering if I could speak to you. He takes a second to look up from his computer, and I see he has bags under his eyes. I've never wondered if Chef is married, or has kids, or how far he lives from school. And unlike us, he's been getting up every single morning to be here early and lead the kitchen, and he often stays after school to prep for the next day. What's up, Imani? Everything good with your bread? I nod. I had some ideas for this year's winter dinner. Some ways we could flip it so it's something new that people who come every year haven't seen. He closes his laptop and gives me his full attention. How so? Well, they always do some canned ham and some simple old green beans, the exact kinds of things people make at home for the holiday. But what if we made it more restaurant style, like a chorizo bite on a bed of herb stuffing, or individual portions of baked mac and cheese? Chef temples his fingers together. What would you do to elevate the mac and cheese? I place a hand on my chest, offended. Absolutely nothing. Baked mac and cheese doesn't need elevation, degradation, hateration, or nothing else. It's perfect in its purest form. Although we could add some Gouda. Chef grins. I love it. Why don't you write up some ideas and we'll figure out the measurements and portions? I walk back to the bread rolls, which have risen in the oven and filled the kitchen with the warmest smell. I'm creating a menu for hundreds of people. I feel like something has risen inside me too, and it tastes a bit like hope. Crunch time. Thanksgiving is a week away, and 2 weeks after that is the winter dinner. We have only a handful of weeks to finish raising the money for Spain. The lunch sales have been going steady, and we are almost at $2,500. But winter break is coming, and the deposit is due a few days after the winter dinner. Even though he tries to look super chill, I know Chef is nervous that we still have over $6,000 to raise. The school will pay us $1,000 for the winter dinner, but that still leaves too much we might not be able to raise in December alone. I've sure gotten a lot better at math since I've taken on tallying up our sales every week to see where we are in the fundraising. When I walk into class the third week in November, I see that there are no recipes on our boards. I button up my jacket and stand next to Richard. Today, we are going to come up with some creative solutions to the problem we are having. Imani has been doing a great job brainstorming ideas to raise money, but I think this last push needs a collective effort. We want to go to Sevilla, yes? As if our heads are attached to puppet strings, we all nod. Malachi raises his hand. What if we built onto what we already have? I don't know how the winter dinner is done every year, but wouldn't that be a good time to do more than just cater? My father does landscaping, Richard says. What if we auctioned off his services? People donate money for that sort of thing, right? Amanda nods. What if we also made the dinner open to the public, not just family and friends? My sister has over 30,000 followers on Instagram, and I'm sure my parents would promote it to their clients. If we moved it to the gym instead of the cafeteria, we could fit more tables. No one I know can offer much, but I begin taking neat notes of the suggestions. Chef Aiden claps his hands, and he looks like he's about to shut down our brainstorming. The thought of adding anything more to our dinner is probably giving him a conniption, but these ideas are too good to stop now. I rush in before he says anything. I think we should expand the dinner. What if we ask the graphic design kids to make us a flyer and we post it on social media? My friend Angelica would do it. Someone from the back yells, Word! We could tag some famous folks. Meek Mill sometimes promotes things like this to his fans, and Joel Embiid might show love. Chef Aiden looks like he wants to interrupt, but people keep calling out other suggestions, and my hand flies over my notebook as I record them all. When the recommendations die down, I raise that same hand and wait on Chef Aiden to give me a nod. As the fundraising chair, I want to propose we bring our ideas to Principal Holderness. We don't have much time, but the worst thing that could happen is he says no. Sometimes you have to ask anyway, right? Chef gives us a long nod. I have some friends from my culinary school days and colleagues who might be willing to attend or contribute. It doesn't hurt to ask. By the time we leave class, I think we're all feeling a bit high. Not only might we raise the money we need, but this is also an opportunity to show off our chops to the school and our families and possibly the whole city. To the bone. The next week zooms by like a train. I move from one thing to the next without stopping, and I'm left tired to my very bones. I mean that literally. Even my bones need a nap. Between my weekend shifts at the Burger John, finishing college applications, creating flyers, using social media to boost a fundraiser, and morning cookings for the lunch crowd or afternoon serving them, I never have time to breathe. Even at home, I'm making dinner or washing dishes, and as much as I love cooking, I could use a pause. And none of that even touches on the fact that I'm usually exhausted just from having to run around ensuring baby girl is fed and clothed and has been to the park, has been read to, has slept well, is up on her checkups, and is ready for her visits with her father. There are some nights I want to cry myself to sleep from how much I'm carrying, but even my eyes are too tired to make tears work properly. Thanksgiving in our house this year is a quiet event. Since I get baby girl for Christmas, New Year's, and Three Kings Day, Tyrone and I decided it makes sense for him to take her for Thanksgiving. So this year it's just me and Buela, eating a small pernil and arroz and rainbow chard, watching the Eagles in an away game. When my cell phone buzzes, I know it's Malachi before I even look at the screen. All of Buela's family has already called her. Aunt Sarah called me and we spoke for a few moments. Then she promised to send me an email with a pie recipe I requested, and Jelly is caught up with Laura's family, so she won't be pressed to reach me. Hey, Santi, I just wanted to wish you a happy Thanksgiving. What do you make? I hesitate before answering. Chocolate pudding, Malachi. You should try some. I say, my face splitting into a smile. Winter dinner. It's the afternoon of Monday, December 9th, and Schaumburg Charter High School is quiet as the last of the students leave. The only people still in the building are the teachers finalizing their grading and the custodians setting up tables and chairs in the gym. In about 2 hours, the school will reopen for the public to come enjoy the winter dinner. But in our small part of the building, game time is right now. All right, class. Tonight is the big night. People have paid money to be here in our fancy gymnasium, and we are almost sold out. The basketball team even rescheduled the game so we could use this space. And Principal Holderness has invited folks from the superintendent's office. Black Thought from the Roots retweeted a post, and over 100 people from the community have bought tickets. We did everything we could to have people show up, but now we have to show out. It's almost like a mini prom. We've wheeled in the long tables from the cafeteria and covered them with cloth. It turns out Angelica's fabrics did not go to waste. We have little Christmas lights set up throughout the entranceway to give the room a nice winter night effect. The basketball hoops have been pushed back, and the score screens are covered with the menu printed on large poster paper. And each of us is in our clean uniform, our caps pinned on tight. It's not some swanky rooftop affair, but damn if it ain't good for being a high school gym transformation in less than 2 weeks. I tune back into Chef's speech. They are all ready to be wined and dined. Well, not wined. That'd be illegal. Make it good. Follow orders. Each group knows what they're in charge of, right? Any menu questions can be directed at Imani or me. Follow the recipes precisely. I got them down to the last grain of salt. Chef gives me a look. The whole class nods at Chef. I don't know about anyone else, but it feels like even my butterflies have butterflies in their bellies. Next to me, Malachi hums meek to himself. Without thinking, I take his hand and give it a light squeeze. He squeezes back, and my nerves die down a bit. Although now my hand is tingling where we touched, I can't win. Everyone jumps to their stations, and I meet Richard and Amanda at ours. We're in charge of assembling spoonfuls of sweet potato casserole, but with a Spanish twist. That was my idea. A southern holiday meal meets a twist of southern Spain. Most of the hors d'oeuvres were prepared beforehand, so we just need to get them in the oven and put on the finishing garnishes. I begin scooping sweet potato casserole onto ceramic serving spoons while Richard garnishes them with sugared walnuts and Spanish sausage. 3 months ago, most of us had never even tried Spanish cuisine, and today we're hosting a semi-Spanish themed banquet. We work like machines. I spoon and pass the bite to my left. Richard adds walnuts and sausage and passes the plate. Amanda adds parsley and cleans the plate. Chili aioli would make this bomb. A sweet and savory bite. I almost walk to the spice cabinet, then stop myself. That's not the recipe. We make trays and trays of food. Some are set forward for the students who will begin serving. These are the skewers of winter veggies and single-serve portions of herb stuffing with jamón ibérico, the less hearty bites. While the first course is being distributed, the rest of us begin wiping down our stations. Our mini bites of sweet potato and mac and cheese will be going out next. The night moves as chaotically and quickly as Angelica when she torpedoes into a room. Before I know it, the last course, individual apple pies, has gone out, and the only thing left to do is to file out and take a bow. It feels strange to leave the kitchen, as if I'm naked. Every recipe that went out had my thumbprint on it, and whether people enjoyed the meal falls on me. A numbers game. Those of us who have been in the kitchen prepping enter the back of the gym and join the rest of our classmates who were serving. Chef Aiden has just been announced and he walks on stage. He wipes his huge hand on his chef's coat before shaking the principal's. Although we are the ones who have been cooking, his coat has just as many puffs of flour and sauce stains as ours do. As many of you have been hearing throughout the night, in addition to being our annual winter dinner, this meal has also served as a fundraiser for our culinary arts class, which will be traveling to Spain during spring break. They've been working diligently throughout the first 2 quarters to raise money, and this was their culminating fundraiser. Principal Holderness opens an envelope. Richard throws an arm over Amanda's shoulder. I squeeze my hands into fists and hold my breath. And the final tally for the evening is $2,000. I quickly tally all the amounts from the lunches and auction revenue with tonight's money. At $15 a ticket, we have about $2,000 left after we cover the cost of food. With the new total, each individual owes about $275. That's more money than I have saved, especially with the balance being due by the end of the week. I blink back the tears in my eyes. This is a happy moment, Imani. Something to be proud of. Don't let them see you cry. Please put your hands together for the students who fed you well tonight. Culinary Arts Class, Section 3. Principal Holderness gestures to us in the back, and at once the dim room is flooded with light so the guests can see us. I squint to adjust my eyes to the light, and now I can see the room too. Buela sits at one of the front tables, and when everyone stands and claps for us, she bounces up and down on the balls of her feet as if she wants to jump. I see Aunt and June from the barber shop in their t-shirts and jeans, clapping with enthusiasm. Julio must have reached out to them. Ms. Martinez from next door is nodding as if she knew we'd be able to accomplish this all along. Around the whole room, I spot neighbors, black homies, Buela's church friends, directors from the cultural center, shop owners, all here to support a dream. Malachi puts his arm around me, and Amanda grabs my hand. We did this. We fed 250 people and showed them why we deserve their time and attention and money, she says. I nod around the lump in my throat. I don't know how I'll come up with my portion of the money, but I'm glad my ideas made it easier for the rest of the class. And she's right. We made something special happen here tonight. The night ends soon after that, and although we need to go to the kitchen to finish cleaning up, most of the class is dapping up homies and saying hi to family members. I'm carving a path over to Buela when a woman steps in my way. Excuse me? She looks familiar, but I can't place her face. I nod at her. Can I help you? She puts out her hand, and when I grasp it, her handshake is firm and her palm is rough. Chef told me to speak to you. Imani, right? I nod at her and let go of her hand. I'm not sure if you remember me, she says, and the moment she says it, I do remember. She's the chef from the fancy restaurant Buela took me to. Cafe... something? After you came to my restaurant, I mentioned meeting you to Paul, Chef Aiden, and he could not stop saying how you're a talented chef in training. I was happy to accept his invitation here tonight to try your food. He tells me you were in charge of the menu. I nod, as if none of this is a big deal, although on the inside I'm a whirl of emotions. For a moment, I forget about what money I have left to raise. Chef Aiden was boasting about me? I clear my throat. Chef Aiden helped me a bit with the menu. The woman nods. The food was delicious. I especially liked the bite of sweet potato casserole. I smile at her. If you thought that was good, you should try an idea I have of adding chipotle aioli. The spice will layer well with the sweetness. I realize I'm talking to her as if we are homegirls and immediately blush. I don't want her to think I'm bragging. She cocks her head at me. Well, I'd love to try that one day. I wanted to give my compliments to the chef. Here's my card. I think what you all are doing here is remarkable.